Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back, everybody, to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me again. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's entrepreneur is also a really good friend of mine. He's best known for creating extremely profitable businesses on Amazon. He currently runs three separate companies: Men's Health and Fitness, Zen Active Sports, and a supplement and nutrition company whose name he won't share with me because he doesn't want me to share it with the world. I met him at the Tropical Think Tank conference this past March, and I was immediately blown away by his knowledge of business, his passion to live a lifestyle that is solely dictated by him. And he's kind of hilarious and makes me laugh all the time. He is also one of the most sought-after speakers in the world on entrepreneurship and lifestyle design. Now, let's hack Ryan Daniel Moran. All right, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am very excited for today's guest. Today's guest is Ryan, and I met Ryan a few months ago in the Philippines at a brilliant conference, and I don't know, there's something about this guy that I think needs to be shown, and we need to, I guess, figure out how we can hack him. So welcome to the show, Ryan.
John, thanks so much for having me. That thing about me is my beard and my incredible body hair. That's what you notice.
Really?
Yeah. That's the thing about me that you're like, I got to have him on the podcast.
Okay. Well, so that's you and say your sexy appearance, but... As an entrepreneur, Ryan, can you tell me what the one thing is that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor so far to your successes?
I think the one thing that has been the best contributor to my success is my obsession with what I call result-driven activity. There's 1,000 different ideas floating around. There's a bunch of things that can occupy our time constantly. But what I try to focus on as far as productivity goes is what is going to bring me a result. And result could also be known as feedback. Feedback in the form of, did something produce a result or did it completely bomb? But the important thing is that regular activities, I spend my time in activities that are going to bring about some sort of result that I can measure. Even recently I've had to do things like turn off Facebook and email just because that's not results driven activity. That is putting out fires constantly. And I think what has made me as an entrepreneur successful is the fact that I am completely obsessed with focusing the majority of my time on result driven activity. And that's why people say, man, you must be so busy. And I go, well, to be honest with you, I do a lot of really cool things, a lot of really big things. But I don't consider myself all that busy because I just focus my time on result-driven activity. And I think that's made all of the difference.
Result-driven activity makes total sense. How do you define the result that you're looking for?
Well, a result-driven activity is something that is going to give me some sort of feedback, some sort of feedback in the marketplace. So, for example, if I send an email to my list to an offer that we've made, we can now measure a result. We can now measure if there is sales or if they're not sales. We can look at conversion data. I can send traffic somewhere and I can look at, did this ad produce a result or was it a poor result? The important thing is we got a result that we can measure and now improve. And now we can have other result-driven activities that improve upon that result. Whereas something like, I got 54 emails answered today, does not produce a measurable result that ultimately impacts the business's growth or success. In the same time, leaving my Skype open all the time does not produce a certain result. Or I can make tweaks to my podcast and I can see if my subscribers go up or if my ranking goes up. That's a result-driven activity. Whereas if I'm, you know, just chatting with a bunch of entrepreneurs, which a lot of entrepreneurs fall into the trap of, that doesn't produce a certain result. Does that clarify what I mean when I say result-driven activity?
Yes, it does. It really, really does. So Could I confuse it though? And at the beginning of result driven activity, you said, so you don't waste your time on Facebook. But like, I mean, what if I post a cool image or something on Facebook and 100 people like it? Is that result driven? Does that help me? Can I say I'm building up social equity to future?
I suppose if that is your core strategy for increasing engagement,
I think you should
maybe
change
you could quantify that.
And you should probably change your strategy. I think.
That's just me. I happen to agree with you.
Okay, good. So, Ryan, there's a time I find in every entrepreneur's life when they realize that either they have a calling to make something big and make an impact in the world, or they just find they can't work for somebody else. Can you tell me which of these two it is for you and then how it happened?
Well, I knew from the time I came out of the womb that I did not want to work for anybody else. If I may, I'd actually like to sidestep your question. Actually, maybe I'll answer it in the way that I didn't expect, because I came out of the womb an entrepreneur. My first business, I was 5 years old. I wrote hand-drawn pictures on computer paper, went door-to-door selling them in the neighborhood for a penny each, made 4 cents that night. Two of them were from my dad, and my dad provided all the computer paper, so it was 100% profit. In business terms, I would have gone back to my best customer, my dad, and tried to upsell him on maybe colored drawings later. But to your point, to your question, I think the biggest shift for me happened about 2 years ago when I was in a business that I hated and I did not feel like I was producing value to the world. I did not feel like I was improving the world with what I was doing. And I felt like I was really burning out on the fact that everything that I did seemed like a selfish gain for me to get somewhere. I wasn't producing real value. So I was driving home thinking about work. And I said to myself, I cannot do this one more day. I cannot go. I just cannot do this. So I went home and I shut down that business. I put up squeeze pages on all of our buy pages, said, sorry, we're no longer in business. I'm retired is what I said. And I decided to go in a completely different direction. And I didn't even know what that direction was going to be. I just knew that I didn't want to be in that business anymore. And what's interesting is my shift then went from how do I make as much money as possible to how do I become the most valuable person possible? And as soon as I did that, I made more money than I had ever made in my life. And I worked less than I ever had in my entire life. And it seemed so counterintuitive to me. If I stop worrying about how do I get further ahead and start thinking about how do I become the most valuable possible so that I'm constantly creating value, that made all of the difference for me. And although I had already been an entrepreneur for 6 or 7 years, it was that moment in which I really shifted to a new level that has unlimited potential. Whereas before, I was just out for myself and creating minimum value, and so I was getting a minimum result. Now I can create an unlimited amount of value, and so as a result, my expansion is unlimited.
Brilliant answer. I love it. And so you talked about quitting the other business, not knowing which direction to go in, about having a complete mind shift change that opened you up to unlimited potential. But then let's go back and how did you, like, can you tell us how then you did decide, once you'd closed down that business, no idea for the next business, how did you, say, sift through potential business ideas or project ideas and decide, okay, I'm going to go this direction now?
Fantastic question. I have a brilliant answer for you. And it goes like this. I started looking at where do I currently have the most value? Where do I currently provide a lot of value really easily? That was a definite qualifier for me. I said, in my next venture, I have to be able to very easily and effortlessly create value that is not connected to my time. So I started looking at areas of my life where I was producing effortlessly a lot of value, and people said that I was getting an immense amount of value. And at that time, I had a handful. Maybe I just had one marketing client at the time. and it was an easy client for me, and they were deliriously happy. And it was really easy for me to write their sales messages. Like, I could do it in my sleep, and their business tripled in the time that I was working with them just from my efforts, which I found to be very simple. So when I shut down the business that I had, which was selling a lot of information products, I then said, okay, I'm very easily creating a massive amount of value for this other company because I work a few hours a week and have tripled their business. So let me see if I can find other clients like these. And I booked a handful of other clients, which was between those clients, I had a six-figure income. And that was my bridge. That was where I said, okay, this is where my cash flow is going to come from. And since I'm able to very easily create value here, that frees me up to not have to jump into a new business idea. So I started planting seeds along things that where I could create a lot of value. And I eventually built very successful Amazon businesses, which is how a lot of people know me, is I have some really successful Amazon businesses. And the way that I grew those was by focusing on the same things that were working for my clients, in the sense of I knew where I could create a lot of value very quickly. And I knew where my unique ability was, where I could have a very large impact with minimal effort on my behalf. You know, my skill set's different than your skill set. I can create a lot of value in one area. You can create a lot of value in another area. And that's what makes free marketplaces so beautiful, is that I value whatever you're producing more than you do because you can make it so easily. So we exchange in the form of dollars or some sort of a trade. So I had the clients for a short amount of time just by focusing on where's my value, where can I very easily create value. And then I took those skills and applied them into the businesses that I eventually grew into multimillion dollar businesses. And that is how those grew so quickly. And then I wound down the clients because I ultimately didn't want to have clients. So I would say that it came down to thinking about where is my greatest value? Where are people saying my greatest value is, to the point where they're paying for it? Can I go to the people who are most willing to pay for that and then focus only on those highest leverage activities, those result-driven activities where people are saying, I'm getting crazy value out of here, and they're willing to pay for it?
This segues us into work. We know now what you are very good at, what your really high leverage, high value activities are. And every expert out there is telling us the 80-20 rule, focus on the 20%. It'll bring you 80% of everything. Do what you are good at, blah, 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 blah. Ryan, tell me something that you are not good at.
Ooh, I am terrible. Terrible at details. And when I say details, I mean pouring through revisions or reviewing something to make sure it's what we're looking for. I'm not good at details. I'm really good at making strategic decisions and leading the charge. But the minute I have to slow down and analyze details, my brain says, this is not growth. We got to get this done as soon as possible. And I do shoddy work and it's horrible. So that's why I have partners and employees, and I partner with very, very detail oriented people, because the secret to partnering is to partner with people who are very, very different than you. So my partners are very detail oriented, and I am whatever the opposite of detail oriented is.
Excellent. I love it because I totally understand where you're coming from. And I love the spark and ignition of getting something rolling, but then yeah, it's the details, just please don't bother me with them. I'm on to something else.
Yeah.
Okay. So you run some very successful businesses, mostly on Amazon at this point. You do just a lot of things, right? And as you said earlier, that people think that you must be a very busy guy and you like to maybe work a couple hours a day only. So let's walk through. You're in a work day You have however many hours you want to work. You probably have a lot you have to accomplish and to get employees and other people doing the tasks for you. Can you walk us through whether it's a 30-minute or a one-hour sort of routine for your morning to set you up to kick ass? But yeah, whatever that is, can you walk us through that?
Yeah, so I wake up and I journal. And when I journal, I write down what my one thing is. And this is straight out of the book, The One Thing. I ask myself the question, what is the one thing that I can accomplish today that by doing so, I make everything else in my life either easier or unnecessary? So that's the ultimate result-driven activity question. What's the one thing that if I accomplished it would make everything else easier or unnecessary? So I write that down in my journal along with everything else that I journal about, my goals and what I'm thankful for and whatnot. And then I go to the gym. And I go to the gym and I don't think about work. And then I come back, get ready for the day, and I work on my one thing. And if I get only that one thing done, it's been a successful day. Because most people don't have a one thing. Most people don't think about what is the thing that I can do that'll make everything easier. They usually ask the question, how can I do as little work as possible and skip out of here without anybody noticing? Well, the way you do as little work as possible is by doing the one thing. So I do my one thing, do an email dump, and then if people need to get a hold of me, they know how they can get a hold of me later. But as long as I get that one thing done, it's a productive day.
Excellent. I love the one thing. I was introduced to it actually at the conference we met at, and it is, yeah, it's like a life-changing thing. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but I've mentioned on the show before. I'm going to mention it again because it's a free app. It's called Momentum App, and it works in your Chrome browser or whatever browser you use. And it literally just pops up a beautiful image from some amazing place in the world and just says, good morning or good afternoon, Ryan. What your one task today is, and you just fill in the blank. So every time you open up the browser or a new tab or anything to go to Facebook or anywhere else, there's this one thing popping up in your face that you're just like, oh yeah, I have to do that one thing today.
Nice.
It's changed the way I work. It's amazing.
Yeah. Something like that. And then locking myself out of Facebook and email combined with something like that, I think is probably the hack for productivity. Eliminate distractions and give yourself the momentum reminder.
Exactly. And be happy with knowing that you only really have to do one thing. If you pick that thing correctly, that is like life-changing and business-changing to do that. Like, you don't have to have 20 things to do every day. You really don't. Those one things are leverage points that create massive amounts of just success and such.
Yeah. If you want to do that one thing and then waste your time the rest of the day, that's fine. Just get your one thing done. Then you can do the 19 other things that don't produce results. If you're going to do them after you do the one thing that actually produces a result.
Exactly. And you'll probably realize by the third or fourth day of doing that, that actually, I'm just going to close my computer now because I'm just really wasting time. Because you've done your one thing. You don't have to convince yourself that, no, I got to stay here and do something useful. You've already done it. Close your computer and go do something fun.
In Gary Keller's book, he mentions, you know, they stack on top of one another. He calls them like dominoes. You have one little tiny domino that opens up to a smaller or still small, but larger domino, which is then a larger. And he produces this image of just the stacking results on top of one another. By a week to 2 weeks into just accomplishing that biggest thing, the tasks and the amount of productivity you're getting done is massive, especially compared to the person who is just putting out fires all day. So that goes back to my first point of why I think my success has been different than most people, is I just focus on those big tasks that are going to produce a result. And the rest is just details. And we all know how I feel about details.
We do. Excellent. So this leads me to habits. You seem to me like you probably have habits that you like to take control of. But what is one habit, Ryan, that you're trying to adopt into your life and you've been struggling with?
I think I'd have to say getting up early. I must confess, I'm embarrassed that I'm admitting this publicly, But I'd say one habit that I have a hard time implementing is keeping a consistent morning routine. There's so many things that I want to do in the morning, or so many things that people say, I do this in the morning and it gives me the greatest productivity you've ever had. Or I take this new nootropic and it boosts my productivity 75%. And I want to try them all. And so I confess that I have tried probably 7 different morning routines. And without that consistency, there's temptation to just sleep through it all until I have to go meet my workout buddies at the gym, do a quick journal entry and run to the gym. I'm proud to say I journal every morning and I do make it to the gym every morning, but there's a bunch of other things that I always want to throw in there. And you're making me publicly say that I have a hard time managing that and making that a habit. I'm now slightly embarrassed. Thanks, John Nastor.
Yes. 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 Thank you. That's awesome. So we'll move from that because it sounds like a touchy subject to you, but struggles and fears as entrepreneurs and as human beings in general, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes and failing. So Ryan, please, can you walk us through how to be wrong?
I think the most important thing about being wrong is letting go of your ego that is attached to the idea that you might be correct. The only reason we care if we are correct or incorrect is because we're afraid of what it will do in our social standing. That's biological. I mean, our brains are wired to be of great value in our social circle because that's how you increase your standing within the tribe, and therefore you have access to more resources. So that's the only reason we care about that. But if we look outside of that small scope and we look at the bigger thing that is being impacted, like our business, then we can remove our own personal attachment to it because we're going for a result rather than our own personal gain. I'd also say that it's really, really hard to be wrong in the sense of failure, where I've had many, 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 many failures, both personal and business-wise. I had a very interesting failure that was really difficult for me this year, which it seems silly to some, but I was a candidate for a major reality show that I was just sure I was going to get, and I set up my life to go on the show, and I was wrong. It came down to me and one other person, and they picked the other person. And I was wrong. But as a result of that, as well as every other of the hundreds of failures I have had, there are new opportunities that come as a result of the failure. People that you meet, lessons that you learned, roads that opened up, places that you moved as a result, produce new opportunities. So our ultimate successes are dependent upon many, many failures. So I would also tell the person who is afraid to be wrong or afraid to fail that you have to go through those failures in order to create the right environment for things to grow. It's like soil. You know, things have to die in order to create the most nurturing soil for things to grow and produce fruit. They have to die to nurture the soil. And our success is the same way. There are ideas and dreams and roads that have to nurture the soil for the right ingredients to be there in order for our success to happen. So if you're coming off a failure, or if you've been wrong on something, just know that you're putting something in the soil that is ultimately going to lead to whatever it is that you're growing.
Okay, and what about the dip? So the dip, explained by Seth Godin, is that you're going to start something and it's not going to work, and it's not going to work, and it's not going to work, and then maybe it'll work. And you need to be aware of what the dips are ahead of time, because everything you're trying to accomplish or achieve in life is going to have these dips. Some of them are bigger. The bigger the dip, the better, because the fewer people get through it. So the bigger rewards are on the other side of it. But say, let's go back to your reality show, and you tried and you tried and you tried, and then you stopped trying. What if that was the end of the dip, and that's why there's so few people on reality shows? How do you know when, okay, this dip's not worth it, or this is actually, I just need to change direction? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I don't know that applies in the sense of the reality show, because they either pick you or they don't pick you. But in terms of business, I have a little bit of a different perspective than Godin on this one. And I think the way that you measure this is in growth. I think you can try and you can try and you can try, and each time grow a little bit more. But if the situation exists in which you are attempting and attempting and attempting, and there is not regular measurable growth happening as a result, it may be time to go into a new direction. You have a clear sign of this if you are attempting and you are attempting and you're attempting and things are shrinking. Things are going in the opposite direction that you want. That means that it's either time to pivot or you need a change in strategy, because the strategy that you're working, that you're using is not working. So my opinion of the dip is that even in the dip, there are still measurable growth happening, even if there's not large leaps in growth, or even if they are not visible to anyone but people who are very internal to the numbers and to what's going on under the hood. But I'd say if you are pushing and pushing and pushing and you're shrinking, where you're pushing and pushing and pushing and there's not growth happening, I think that is a clear indicator of when it is time to at least consider a change in strategy.
Smart. Well said. I like it. So Ryan, it's 1 year from today. You and I were sitting down and having a beer. We're celebrating this amazing year that just has passed you. What did you accomplish to make it so awesome?
I developed a good morning routine, that's for sure. You know,
let's go big, man. What did you do?
I gotta be honest with you, John. This is my obvious avoidance of your question, because I used to ask myself this question often, and I found that this question didn't serve me. So I changed the question. And the reason for this is I found, at least for the way that my brain works, and I don't know if this is the case for all entrepreneurs, but this is how my brain works, is that I really enjoyed setting these one-year projections for myself, and I really enjoyed moving towards them. But like most entrepreneurs, I would hit some of those things and I wouldn't hit some of those things. And I, like other entrepreneurs, would beat myself up over the things that I did not accomplish much more than I celebrated the wins that I did accomplish. And so I found that I would look back on these one-year projections and feel bad about myself regardless of what it was that I accomplished. And people would say, you know, you did this and you did this, you did this, and you're so handsome and you have this incredible beard. And I would say, but I feel bad about all of it because I didn't get X, Y, Z. I didn't get everything on my list. In fact, look at this one. I barely made any progress here. I only have a 6-pack. I don't have a 12-pack. And the way that I switched this is a very simple switch that I learned from Dan Sullivan, where he says that this is common for entrepreneurs to have this ideal that is constantly moving. And we think we are moving towards this ideal, but it just continues to move. So as a result, we just constantly feel bad about our successes rather than celebrate them. But if we reverse that, and we just think about where we were a year ago, and we think about the growth that has happened a year ago, and our focus just becomes continual growth, then we accomplish more than we ever thought we could, and we celebrate it more, so we actually enjoy our success, and our total happiness has changed. So I changed this approach in me, and I'm sorry, I'm totally avoiding your question, because I've played with this question many times. If in 1 year from now, I look back and I say, I have grown as a person more than I ever have grown, and the people around me have grown as a result of me growing, then I say this has been an incredible year. The numbers and the results I let go of because I know that when I cling to them, they elude me. Whereas if I focus on growing myself and I grow those around me and I grow my businesses continually, then I far out achieve anything that I could have projected or written down or meditated on.
There we go. It had a 3 or 4 minute preface, but then you answered it very, very well. And thank you, because I'm so happy that you started the interview and you stopped it by talking about your most excellent beard. You mentioned it both times. And to me, that's finale. That's great.
So in literary terms, we call that a motif.
There we go. So you've intrigued everyone. You've probably blown some people's minds with, you're a brilliant dude. You have a lot of stuff really, really figured out, Ryan. But can you tell now everyone where they can find out more about Ryan Daniel Moran?
Yeah, I actually set up a special page at my website. My website is freedomfastlane.com. I have a podcast as well called Freedom Fast Lane. I set up a page for Hack the Entrepreneur at freedomfastlane.com/hack. I just put together what I thought were some of the best podcasts and best resources I put together that would mesh with your audience. So that's at freedomfastlane.com/hack. And you can download some of the best podcasts that I thought would fit with those who listen to Hack the Entrepreneur.
Excellent. I love that. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes, of course, for everyone, so they don't have to type it out. So thank you so much, Ryan. I truly, truly appreciate you coming on.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me. Congrats on the success of the podcast.
Ryan Daniel Moran. Such a smart dude. Such a fun conversation. I really, really like that guy. And I hope that you guys got as much out of that conversation as I did. But there's that one point, wasn't there? There was. Did you hear it? Let's get it. Let's go hear the hack.
Ooh, I am terrible, terrible at details. And when I say details, I mean pouring through revisions or reviewing something to make sure it's what we're looking for. I'm not good at details. I'm really good at making strategic decisions and leading the charge. But the minute I have to slow down and analyze details, my brain says, this is not growth. We got to get this done as soon as possible. And I do shoddy work and it's horrible.
And that's the hack. Okay. That one is a bit different. That one is, the hacks have typically been things that people are really good at, but I honestly believe that you have to know what it is you are terrible at as well as you need to know what you are good at. You don't have to be good at everything. No, you don't. You have to be good at one or two things. You have to be really, really good at those things. But it's essential that you know what you aren't good at so that you cannot do those things and you can get others or partner with others to do those things. It's absolutely essential. And I loved how he was so confident. Ryan was absolutely confident in what he was terrible at, and he held nothing back. He was not afraid to be terrible at those things, and you can't be. You have to admit it. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at organization. I'm terrible at being somewhere at a specific time. I really am. And it took me a long time to admit those things, that I could have a successful business and be terrible at certain things, because I can put things in place or people in place to make sure that I am at certain places when I need to be, or that I am organized, or that my business is organized, and I can still have a crazy office and it doesn't matter. So I love that he was so confident in that. And I absolutely believe that that's key, and I'm making it the hack. Thank you so much again for joining me on Hack the Entrepreneur. You guys are truly amazing and blowing my mind with how many of you are out there and listening. It's amazing. It truly, truly is. And I'm so happy for it. I have 142 reviews on the iTunes store already. 5 stars, all of them. And it's amazing to read. If you haven't left me one, please, hackthentrepreneur.com/iTunes will take you there. Or just go to the iTunes store, look up Hack the Entrepreneur, leave me a rating and a review. It would mean so much to me. If you can, put your Twitter handle, your @, and your name in there for me, because I would love to go on Twitter and be able to reply to you. The worst part is getting to read these and wanting to reply to you, but I don't know who you guys are. Sorry, but I thank you so much for it, and I truly appreciate all the reviews you've left so far. Thank you so much for taking the time to do that. So this has been fun. Please come back next time. Until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.